This is your call on Election Day. If you are free tonight, we would love for you to join us for a live broadcast at 111 Minna Street in San Francisco. It'll start at 7 p.m. You can find more information at kalw.org. Click on events. Now we are going to talk about gerrymandering, voter suppression, and what we can expect from MAGA election deniers across the country today. Today's next guest, Mother Jones reporter Ari Berman, co-wrote a piece with Justin Glaw called How Election Deniers Took Over Georgia's Election System. They report that Trump's MAGA allies are spreading disinformation and laying the groundwork to challenge the election results. Hi, Ari. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hey, Rose. Happy Election Day. Thanks for having me back.
Well, happy Election Day, Ari. I have to be honest. It was really hard to do that first segment. It's hitting me so hard because we've done so many shows about abortion long before Roe was overturned, and just to think that women are dying. And I just wanted to ask you, Ari, you know, what are your and if you don't have any comments on this, I hate to spring this on you, but I'm just taking a deep breath here, and I'm thinking about what we've learned over the past couple of days is that older women... How many times do we even hear from older women in this election cycle that they remember what it was like before Roe? And according to polling, they are voting in massive numbers, 2-1 for Harris. And it just made me think, have I even heard from, quote, older women in this election cycle? Not very often.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen, but I think there is a real sense in the country that a lot of rights have been taken away in recent years. And we're moving backwards in an alarming way on a number of fronts. And I think that was true before Roe v. Wade was overturned, but I think that was really a light bulb moment for a lot of people that finally got it, that there is an extreme movement in the Republican Party that has now become mainstream that wants to take the country back. Not one decade, not two decades, but many, many decades. And they want to do it in all sorts of ways, not just on abortion rights, but on voting rights, on economic rights, on labor rights, on so many other issues. And that when, you know, Trump talks about Make America Great Again, the again that he's clearly referring to is this time when, you know, white male Christian power was dominant, right? And women and black people and Hispanics and other historically disenfranchised and marginalized groups didn't have the same amount of power that they have today. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the polls are wrong, but quite frankly, wrong in the Democrats' favor. And I also just think in general, if you look beyond just the partisanship, if you look at the numbers, people are very unhappy across party lines about things like abortion bans. And you have 70, 80% of people opposing these things. Now, it doesn't always correlate to who they vote for the candidate, right? Because if that was the case, they would be voting 70% for the Democrats. That's not happening. But I think on some of these issues, and I think particularly on the issue of abortion, it's broken through across party lines, across gender, across age. I think even for a lot of men, they're alarmed if they have daughters, for example, at living in a world where their daughters could have fewer rights than their mothers. And I think it's just that one issue, I think, just personifies so much of what's at stake in this election.
Exactly. It's going to be so interesting just to see what we learn about who voted and why. I was reading about a pro-choice men's group in Florida that's getting the vote out for Yes on 4. We've been hearing so much about the, quote, bros, the bro podcasts that have had Trump on, the bros who are voting for Trump and Vance, and we're just not hearing much about groups like Men for Choice and young men who are voting for whatever, their sisters, their daughters, their moms, what have you. That I think could also be one of the big untold stories of this election season.
Yeah, and I think there's also just a normie vote in the country writ large that it is not really being told. I mean, so much of it is being powered by the extremes, and you have the Joe Rogans and the Elon Musks, and they're basically just talking to each other at this point. I mean, I know they have very large audiences, but they're just, I still think it's very much an echo chamber, and there's a lot of people out there that may not even be that political, that are just disgusted by what's happening, that are disgusted by rights being taken away, that are disgusted by things like the overturning of Roe v. Wade, the insurrection at the Capitol. And this might be old news to some people, but I think it's not old news to people casting their ballots. This is very much top on mind. And they want to go back to, you know, in America where people can cast a vote and not worry that the election's going to be overturned, or people don't have to think that laws that have been settled for 50 years will suddenly be overturned by an extreme Supreme Court. And so I think in a lot of ways, we need to go forward as a country. But one of the things we need to do is just get back to some sort of normalcy first to then begin to build on that. And I think that's also something that it is very much in terms of what people are thinking about when they cast a ballot right now.
And Ari, you've been writing about these issues for years. Your book, Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics, came out in 2012. And then your book, Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America, came out in 2015. Your latest book, which is so good, and we had you on for this one, Minority Rule, The Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It, came out this year. So you've been following these issues, voter suppression, gerrymandering, minority rule, for some time now. How would you assess where we are today on those issues, given that thanks to you and other reporters, they're finally just getting so much more attention?
Well, I think big picture, we're at an historical hinge point. And I don't think it's that different than other historical hinge points we've been at before, whether it was after the Civil War or during the Civil Rights Movement, where the question is, which way are we going to go as a country? Are we going to be a country that embraces multiracial democracy and ensures rights and freedoms for all? Or are we going to be a country that preserves white conservative minority rule and that shuts out a lot of people from the democratic process? And I think those two strands have existed side by side, that we are a country that has expanded and also restricted democracy, often at the same time in our history. And so we have that duality as a country. And at various points, we're forced to choose which path we're going to take. And sometimes we've taken the right path, like during the Civil Rights Movement, and sometimes we've taken the wrong path, like after Reconstruction, when Black men got the right to vote, and then it was violently taken away for nearly 100 years. So it's not a linear thing. And the way I think about it today is we're at that similar point where there's one side that basically believes in democracy and the rule of law and everyone participating, and there's another side that doesn't believe in those things, that are trying to take away rights and are trying to overturn election outcomes and are trying to limit who can and can't vote. And my big fear about the election was that I do believe there is a strong pro-democracy majority in this country based on what's happened in 2020, based on what happened in 2022. And I think you could look at 2016 as something of an aberration. The question is, how is it going to find its expression? Because in so many states, there's hyper-gerrymandered legislatures blocking the will of the majority. There's the Supreme Court blocking the will of the majority. There's the Electoral College, which in many ways blocks the will of the majority. So the question is not whether there's a pro-democracy majority in the country, but can the pro-democracy in the majority overcome the structural barriers that in many ways enshrine minority rule?
Well, and everything you just laid out there, gerrymandering and the Electoral College, is why we have so many unpopular policies in this country, like these extreme abortion bans in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at Wisconsin was one state I went to recently, and they have an abortion ban from 1849 that's still on the books. It's opposed by 90% of Wisconsinites, no exceptions for rape or incest. I mean, literally was passed before women had the right to vote. And that's something that any common sense legislature would have gotten rid of. But Wisconsin's legislature is so gerrymandered that they won't do anything about it. And the fascinating thing is that those gerrymandered maps have been struck down in Wisconsin now by a progressive majority in the state Supreme Court. And they're going to have competitive elections for the state legislature. I think they will have a different kind of state legislature in the next session. And there might actually be a potential to repeal that abortion ban. But that's one reason why you saw abortion rights supporters put abortion on the ballot in 10 states and go directly to the people. And I think they're going to succeed in most, if not all, of these places, because there is strong support for that. And we see that on a range of issues, not just on abortion, but when it comes to, you know, raising the minimum wage, legalizing marijuana, making it easier to vote. Time and time again, there's strong support for these things among the public. but they're often blocked by these gerrymandered legislatures. So making the political system more fair doesn't just help democracy, it leads to better policy outcomes, which is why the point I'm always trying to making that if you care about all of these different issues, whether it's women's right to choose, climate change, racial and economic justice, if the democratic system is skewed, it's going to make it much harder to get any of these things to become law.
You have a great piece about your trip to Wisconsin that just came out a few days ago. You report that in 2018, Wisconsin Republicans won 46% of the vote, but 64% of the seats in the assembly because of gerrymandering. And because the gerrymandered maps have been struck down, the Democrats have a chance to flip the state legislature, the legislative chamber, for the first time since 2010.
Yeah, it's hugely significant because Wisconsin's a 50-50 state on every level except at the state legislative level, where it's more likely that Republicans will get a two-thirds supermajority than Democrats will get a 50-50 majority. That's how skewed it is. And like I said, that has skewed state politics in all sorts of ways. And of course, it's a legislature that sets voting rules and sets abortion laws and so many other things that people care about. And the fascinating thing when I was in Wisconsin is a lot of people care about these down ballot races. The conventional wisdom is that people care about the top of the ticket and they tend not to follow what's happening at the bottom of the ticket. And that's certainly true in a lot of cases. But in places like Wisconsin, where the state legislature has been such an issue for so long, people care a lot about the bottom of the ticket. And in fact, Democrats think that the bottom of the ticket in Wisconsin may make the difference for the top, meaning that there may be people who are ambivalent about Kamala Harris, but they're so angry about how Republicans have controlled the state for a decade and a half, they're going to vote down ballot first. Then they're going to go up ballot to vote for president. And so that kind of flips the conventional wisdom on its head about how politics works. And I saw it when I was there because the candidates that are running for state legislature, they're from these communities, right? They understand what people care about. And they can break through the stereotypes of what a Democrat stands for in a way that maybe someone like Kamala Harris, who's from California, no offense, Rose, but might not be able to do.
No offense taken at all, Ari. You also report that Democrats can retake or maintain control of state legislative chambers in Arizona, New Hampshire, Michigan, Minnesota, and Pennsylvania. So there's really, as you tweeted this earlier, there's so many important down ballot races happening today that deserve a lot more attention.
So many. And these state legislatures don't get nearly enough coverage because how much have they been on TV relative to the presidential race? But when it comes time to decide, what are the voting laws of the country going to look like? What are rights for women going to look like? What are environmental laws going to look like? Gun control laws, healthcare, so many things. Those happen at the state legislative level. And people's votes really matter in these races. I mean, it's often hard to convince people that their vote matters for a presidential election. But at the state legislative level, these races are often decided by a handful of votes. The example I give most often is the Virginia legislature was decided by a coin flip in 2016. It was so close and the closest race was tied. So that's how much your votes matter. And I think people in these states care a lot about these issues, even though it's not being covered nationally. And so people in Arizona and in Michigan and in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, they're aware of these state legislative elections. And that's going to go a long way to determine what happens if Kamala Harris is elected, because she's either going to have a Democratic Congress she can work with, or if there's a Republican Congress, a lot of stuff's going to have to happen at the state level. And then this, what happens at the state level will influence what happens at Washington, just like the inverse happened under Obama's presidency, where Obama had a Democratic Congress and a Democratic House and Senate for the first 2 years of office, but Republicans had such big majorities at the state level, they were basically able to have this counter-revolution at the state level that was able to nullify so much of what Obama tried to do.
Today we're speaking with Mother Jones reporter Ari Berman, who does great reporting on voter suppression, gerrymandering. He's got a piece out about what we can expect from MAGA election deniers across the country today. We're almost out of time, Ari, but let's talk about what we're hearing from across the country. So I'm just reading from Democracy Docket. This organization led by Mark Elias has really filed a lot of lawsuits. They're trying to just make sure that people can actually vote. So I'll just read a few of the tweets that have just come out in the past couple hours. Polling hours have been extended in Cambria County, Pennsylvania from 8 to 10 p.m. today due to voting system issues this morning. Incumbent GOP House candidate Representative Mike Lawler, facing what is expected to be a tight New York race, is seeking to halt the counting of ballots cast by incarcerated voters in Westchester County Jail. Arizona judge rejects the Maricopa County Republican Committee's request to prohibit the county from using electronic voting systems. There's just so much here. After Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton sued to block the DOJ from monitoring elections today, the state of Texas and the DOJ have reached an agreement. The federal monitors will remain outside of polling locations. One more. A federal judge rejects an attempt from Republican officials in Missouri to prevent the DOJ from monitoring polling places in St. Louis today. The DOJ will ensure compliance with federal voting rights laws. I mean, it's hard to keep up with all of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are obviously a lot of details that are happening, and it's fast and furious. I mean, I think the most important takeaway so far is that voting by and large has gone smoothly.
Great.
And that's the biggest thing. That I was on an election protection call before I got on with you, and by and large, in most places, the process has gone smoothly. There were a few alarming things. There was a bomb threat that was called into Fulton County, Georgia, in Atlanta, that led to some polling places that were closed. And the Secretary of State there, Brad Raffensperger, who's a Republican, said the threat came from Russia. So that's obviously very alarming, because it seems like that's clear evidence of Russian interference in the election. So that was probably the most newsworthy thing I heard today. Otherwise, it seems to be the usual issues. Some things malfunction here, some things malfunction here. I think one of the things I'm concerned about is that Republicans have filed a lot of lawsuits, over 150 lawsuits this election cycle, and they really ratcheted up the lawsuits right in the run-up to the election in August and September. And that's a very late period to be filing lawsuits. And I think one of the reasons they did that is to try to use it as a pretext to challenge the results. So as much as we're paying attention to ballots being cast today, in my feeling, there's really two elections. There's the election that happens when people cast ballots. Then there's the election that happens to ensure that all votes are counted. And to me, that's the more significant of the two elections, quite frankly, based on what has happened in 2020. And that is something that is very much still up for grabs. Now, it depends how close it is. It depends on lots of different factors. But I think that Republicans are very much telegraphing how they're going to challenge the results, even more so than in 2020. And I think that's the thing that we all have to be prepared about, is that once this one phase of the election ends, another more disturbing phase might begin.
What do you think we should expect, and how do you think the media should responsibly report on what might happen?
Well, first off, it could take time if it's close. And I think that people just have to be reminded that that's just how the process works. It's not any evidence of malfeasance if it does take a few days. So that's one thing, because there's going to be a lot of weaponization of that. And if votes come in at 2 a.m. in Milwaukee, because it takes longer to count votes there, that's going to be viewed as some sort of thing that is an evidence of a conspiracy, as opposed just to how the process works. So that's the first thing. I think people are more prepared for Trump's tactics now than they were before. So if Trump tries to falsely declare victory, or he starts leaning on election officials, I think there's going to be more pushback to that. The thing I worry about, though, is that the disinformation chamber is so much louder, mm-hmm. that because of Elon Musk running Twitter, and because of so many other things like that, the potential for disinformation is larger. Now, whether or not that will impact the election count, we don't know, but it could impact the noise surrounding the election count. And that could lead to protests, that could lead to violence, that could lead to things that are hard to control. January 6th type events, maybe not January 6th, but mini January 6th at state capitals or other places. And that's one of the things that I'm really concerned about, is it feels like just about half the country is prepared right now not to accept the election outcome.
Ari, how do you think, this is a very big question, I'd love to have you on for a longer conversation about this, but how do we get out of this mess? Just to think that election officials, and I want to give a huge shout out to election officials. I mean, when you think about 82 million people already voting, and then millions more voting in person today, in this massive country, all of these election officials who dedicate their lives to making sure that everything goes smoothly. They're so passionate about, you know, just ensuring that this day goes smoothly. They're doing so much amazing work behind the scenes. And yet in Georgia, they've got panic buttons. I saw a video of a white man just saying horrible things to black women election workers. How are we going to kind of unwind all of this? Because it's gotten just so, so ugly. Let's talk about just elections first and how, you know, election workers are being treated.
Well, I think it starts with defeating the movement that is harassing election officials and trying to subvert election outcomes and defeating the leader of that movement. I mean, until the leader of that movement is gone from the political scene, that's going to remain an influential movement. And so I think it's like you have to cut the head off the snake first. And so that's one reason why I think this election is so important, because to me, it represents much more than one election. It really represents the possible defeat of a reactionary movement. And, you know, I'm not going to be so naive to believe that if Trump loses, his movement goes away. But I think it gets defanged. And what I think there are a lot of Republicans out there that would like to have something different. Now, I'm not saying that they're not going to be very conservative. I'm not saying they're not going to try to undermine democracy in their own kind of ways. But I do think that Trump poses a unique threat in terms of the tactics that he's used so far, how far he's willing to go to erode democratic norms, and how far his supporters are willing to go. And I'm not sure you get rid of that in one election, but it starts with accountability for those people. And the fact is, Trump has not faced accountability for his election, for his actions. He has been let off the hook by the Congress, which did not impeach him. He was let off the hook by the Supreme Court, which did not allow trials to go forward that should have gone forward. And therefore, the only recourse is at the ballot box. And that's what people are going to have to do. And that's the first step here. Then you have to begin to unwind this movement and to start supporting people that believe in fair election outcomes, both Democrats and Republicans, and understand, like, we can have disagreements over things, but we can't have disagreements over whether or not votes should be counted. Things like that should be off the table. And let's disagree about policy like we used to in 2004, 2008, in the not too distant future. And so to me, it really starts with what happens on election day, and then it goes from there.
Mm. Ari, final thoughts? I mean, I'd love to have you back, you know, maybe in a few weeks. Well, if definitely this week, we'd love to have you back, but in a few weeks to talk about when you think we'll ever get rid of the Electoral College.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need a much more fundamentally democratic system. I think there's lots of flaws in our system, from how we elect presidents to how we choose members of Congress to how we elect state legislatures. There's too much opportunity at all levels of government for partisan manipulation and for a pro-democracy majority to be thwarted by an anti-democracy minority. And so it's not just about restoring a status quo. It's about ultimately fixing a broken system. And restoring the status quo is so much about what November 5th is about, but what November 6th and 7th and everything after that has to be about is fixing that broken system, so we don't have to keep going back to these ticking time bombs every 4 years.
Ari Berman is a reporter with Mother Jones who covers gerrymandering, voter suppression, and MAGA election deniers. His latest book is called Minority Rule, The Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It. Ari, thank you so much for your work, and we'd love to have you back soon.
Thanks, Rose. Always great to talk to you. Happy to come back on soon.
Thank you, Ari. And we're going to give the final word today to Vicky, who just sent us an email. Vicky writes, "When I was a 16-year-old pregnant rape victim in Arizona, I was forced to give birth to a boy that I eventually met. Not the worst story there, but oh my, the unresolved grief that has been a feature of my entire adulthood and all the many handicaps, romantic, parental, professional, familial, I've suffered as a result. Please, not my 17-year-old granddaughter, please. I have only recently begun to speak, but I have been phone banking in Arizona this election, and I'm feeling some agency return to me as a result." Thank you so much for sharing your story, Vicky. And it's amazing that you're sharing this story, even if you just began to speak recently, and we greatly appreciate you sharing it with us. And thank you all for joining us on this election day. If you are free tonight, we would love to see you at our live broadcast, 111 Minna in San Francisco. It starts at 7 p.m. You can find information at kalw.org. Click on events. And then tomorrow we will have a special hour and a half your call to talk about election results. We hope you can join us for that. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. And remember, if you live in California, you can still register to vote today, and the polls close at 8 o'clock tonight.